Hello there. This is the Takeaway Podcast. I'm John Hockenberry, and on behalf of the entire team, we hope you enjoy the program.
This is the Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick, filling in for John Hockenberry today, and thank you so much for listening. Well, throughout today's show, we're asking you what advice you would have given yourself the day you got married. Hopefully not like this.
Well, this is it, Frank. It's now or never. You need to get out of here while you're still single.
I'm not single.
She's 30 yards away from you. You're still single right now.
Come on. This is the best thing that's ever happened to me.
Once you give that 6 months, you don't think that's going to change? I got a wife, kids. Do I sound like a happy guy to you, Frankie?
Some unsound advice for Frank the Tank from old school there. Why are we going there? Because we're talking about the new documentary, 112 Weddings, and what works and what doesn't work when it comes to making marriages work. That's later this hour. But we want to begin this hour with two major decisions from the Supreme Court, the first of which touches nearly every American and the technology that's come to define our lives and fill our pockets. In a unanimous decision from the court today, the justices ruled that police cannot search cell phones without obtaining a warrant. Now, that decision was issued on two cases. One involved a man named David Riley, who was pulled over for driving with expired tags in San Diego. Police found guns under the hood of his car and searched his cell phone, which led them to believe he was involved in gang activity. In the other case, Boston police used call logs from an arrested woman's flip phone as evidence against her in a drug-related crime case. As the case went to court, we spoke with Philadelphia Police Commissioner Charles Ramsey, who argued for why police need the ability to search cell phones without obtaining a warrant.
Whether it's video, whether it's phone numbers, text messages, whatever, it is technology that we have to deal with on a regular basis now in today's world. I realize that there's personal information in smartphones, but when we do make an arrest, it is very, very important that we be able to have access to information that would lead us to a criminal conviction in a particular case.
Well, the justices today disagreed, and they disagreed unanimously. Joining us now is privacy law expert Peter Swire. He's a professor of law and ethics at Georgia Tech and one of five members of President Obama's review group on NSA surveillance. Professor, welcome.
Glad to be here.
Well, the language of the ruling, Chief Justice John Roberts wrote the opinion for the court. I'll read part of the text because it's pretty plain. Our answer to the question of what police must do before searching a cell phone seized incident to an arrest is accordingly simple. Get a warrant.
And the need for a clear rule is something that all nine justices clearly thought was important. This is something every cop on the street will understand, and it changes practice across the country immediately.
Now, part of the question here was whether a cell phone in someone's pocket is like anything else in your pocket. You know, if they take a piece of paper out of your pocket, police can search you when you're arrested. But the court has said a cell phone isn't the same thing as the other stuff that's on your person.
No, a cell phone is small physically, but it's absolutely enormous when it comes to the data that it holds. So it's not like that little piece of paper that might have a phone number on it or a name on it. It's everything in your life for the last bunch of years. And I think the Supreme Court has now gotten comfortable with its own understanding of technology to realize it's not just a phone or just a small thing physically on your body. But when it comes to tracking your location, when it comes to email, when it comes today to cell phones, the courts are really shifting to more scrutiny of police practices. The courts are more willing to bring the Fourth Amendment up to date now.
And I want to ask you about that in the context of the Fourth Amendment a little bit, because you're a privacy surveillance expert as well. Now, when the cops arrest you on the roadside and take your iPhone out of your pocket, that's not surveillance in the same sense as NSA surveillance. Does this ruling tell us anything about that other thing you just mentioned, tracking locations, using the technology, the cell phone, to search you?
I think it does not specifically say that in the court's opinion, but there has been, I think, a major shift in the Supreme Court jurisprudence. The first sign of that was a case a couple of years ago called U.S. versus Jones, where the Supreme Court said if the government sticks a tracking device on your car for a month, you need a warrant to do that, even though that car was out in public the whole time. And that was 9-0, and today's 9-0. And we have the lower courts now saying that emails deserve a warrant and saying that the location of your cell phone deserves a warrant. And these cases are coming up next to the Supreme Court probably in the next year or two.
Now, what about the police in the case of an arrest? How does this affect them now that they can't open up the iPhone, the cell phone, and search it?
Well, it's a lot like a locked trunk in your car. They can go get a warrant. and then they can get in if the judge believes it's appropriate. Or if there's what's called exigent circumstances, if there's an emergency, if it turns out that we think this person's using their phone as an IED device exploder, then you can get the phone away from them and you can try to make sure the IED doesn't go off. That would be a clear example. And cell phones are used that way in the Middle East and in other places. So if something's going to get blown up, the cops can do it. If the cops go and seize it and they don't have exigent circumstances, they run the risk of not being able to use the evidence in court. So police face a real incentive to follow the rules and get a warrant now.
And before we let you go, Professor Swire, this may sound like a pedestrian question, but because this ruling was about cell phones, which the court said aren't really phones anymore but computers, what does this mean for my iPad, which has no phone function but is a computer just the same? I might have it in my car.
I think that the logic here is that there's plenty of time for the police to get a warrant if they seize your iPad, and any reasonable police officer is probably going to need to get that warrant before looking around inside your iPad or inside the laptop computer.
Well, the court says it today, and they say it very clearly. Police, if you want to search a cell phone during an arrest, it's simple. Get a warrant. Peter Swire is professor of law and ethics at Georgia Tech and one of the five members of President Obama's review group on NSA surveillance. Professor, thank you.
Pleasure to be here.
Let's turn now to a second big ruling handed down by the court today. It's a ruling against internet service Aereo. In a major victory for the big TV broadcasters, the Supreme Court ruled 6-3 that Aereo violates the Copyright Act. Now, Aereo is a streaming television startup that lets customers watch broadcast TV on mobile devices, tablets, and computers through a monthly subscription. Now, in lieu of a physical antenna, subscribers can watch broadcast television through Aereo and record shows on a virtual DVR player. It's basically a tiny antenna that scoops signals out of the air and puts them on your device. Well, you can imagine that broadcasters, including Walt Disney Corporation, Comcast, NBC, CBS, and 21st Century Fox, argued that Aereo was using their programming without authorization in violation of exclusive rights to the public performance of their work, and that means they weren't paying for it. So for more on the story, I want to welcome Bob Garfield, host of On the Media, which is made by our co-producer WNYC, and he's here with me. Hi, Bob.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Surprised by the ruling?
No, I am so not surprised by this ruling. Aereo's business was based on a technological loophole. They couldn't have set up a big whopping antenna and scooped all of the signals off of the air and then redistributed them online. But what they did was, because that's theft, right? That is theft of copyrighted material. And they would have had to pay retransmission fees to the broadcasters in order to do that. So to get around paying the retransmission fees, they set up a drazillion itsy-bitsy little antennas. And essentially, they are an antenna rental service. And if you subscribe, you get one of these itsy-bitsy little antennas assigned only to you for the portion of time that you are streaming programming. And they say to the big broadcasters and cable companies, oh, no, we're not scooping up and retransmitting. We're just letting individuals have access to an antenna to do with what they will. And the Supreme Court said, that's just a loophole. You're stealing. Stop it.
And you're not allowed to do that. Now, the whole point of this business model that exists between the cable providers and the content providers is if cable wants to take a CBS show and pipe it through the cable to your TV, they pay for that. In fact, they have to put it on their cable service. But this is the exact point that Aereo was circumventing.
Exactly. And you have to understand that both cable and broadcast depend on that for their life's blood, because broadcasters, their advertising revenue is dipping because their audiences are shrinking so much. These retransmission fees is keeping networks and local TV stations alive, and of course cable is marking it up and gouging you with your monthly cable bill. That's why your cable bill is more than $100 often every month. This enabled consumers to circumvent cable altogether, which was taking money from the pockets of big TV, big broadcast, and big cable. And had the court ruled otherwise, that would have been one of the last nails in the coffin of big TV. Now it looks like it'll be one of the only nail in the coffin of Aereo. I don't see that it has a future.
And I saw an Aereo investor on television just a few minutes ago basically saying it's over.
Was he sobbing?
He might have been expecting it too, just like you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, on our show, we confronted the founder of this and said, yeah, I know it's an individual antenna, but tell me again why this isn't theft.
Right.
And he never could directly answer that question, which was his problem in front of the court.
Now, you said if this ruling had gone the other way, it would be a final nail in the coffin. But quickly before we go, what does this really say? You know, we've been talking about the merger between content providers and cable, saying that may jack rates up. A lot of critics are nervous about that. Does this say anything about the future of rates if those cable rates are still so high and here's more competition that's been killed?
I don't know much about the world. Cable rates will always go up, period.
And that won't surprise you either when it does.
No. That's not that tall.
That's Bob Garfield. He's host of On the Media, helping us understand the Supreme Court 6-3 decision today against antenna provider, no, content stealer, Aereo. Later this hour, Wedding Days Revisited, a former wedding videographer, returns to all those couples he filmed to see if those happy couples are still happy. Now, what advice would you have given yourself on your wedding day?
This is Nikki Ellenbach from Kirkland, Washington, and I would say to my 21-year-old self, remember, you are on the same team from here on. We got married in college back in 1981, and we are still together 3 decades later. But on that wedding day, we never expected what hard but wonderful work it would be to come this far.
Hard and wonderful work from Washington State, and this from Houston, Texas.
I know you love this girl, and you know for sure that she is pregnant with your child. But you're only 19 years old, and you have your whole life ahead of you. Go ahead and honor your Army enlistment. But find another way to do the right thing by your kid. You're a smart man. Figure it out.
Advice from an older man to a younger man there. Lori in Salt Lake City reminds us that sometimes wedding plans can be a distraction from the bigger picture.
Hey, this is Lori from Salt Lake City, and my advice to people on their wedding day is the wedding is just a day and the marriage is a lifetime. Trust in your instincts and your partner, not in the needs and desires of others.
And Tyra from Decatur reminds us the deal's not sealed until you say those words, I do.
Hiya, R. Baker, Decatur, Georgia. It's still not too late. Don't be afraid to change your mind if it doesn't feel right.
Hi, this is Denise McQuinn. I'm calling from Dallas, Texas. And the advice I would give myself would be wait. Wait a while, at least till like late 20s, early 30s.
And here's some more advice from the practical side. One of you in Hackensack, New Jersey writes to us, check his credit score before you get married. Some good advice there. We're going to talk to director Doug Block about his new film, 112 Weddings, and with couple number 111. That's coming up on The Takeaway. Stay with us. Let's turn now to the state of the economy and listen to this one number, 2.9. 2.9%, that's how much the U.S. economy shrank or tanked in the first quarter of 2014. We haven't seen such a bad number for 5 years. Now, this is the third estimate from the U.S. Commerce Department, and it's at odds with a previous estimate of just a 1% contraction. But we're also being told the economy is expected to bounce right back during the second quarter. It's a little hard to understand, and Charlie Herman, business and economics editor for The Takeaway and WNYC, is with me now to help explain. Hi, Charlie.
Hello.
When I read the number 2.9%, it seemed like either an anomaly or a disaster, because those are depression numbers, a shrink in GDP that year.
That's a really bad number. And it's funny because we knew that the first 3 months of this year weren't that good. I mean, you're just saying some of the initial estimates showed that. But I don't think anyone necessarily felt that we were in a recession, that it was that bad. And this isn't to say that we are, but those are the sorts of numbers that you would say were going down that course. But it's funny because a lot of people expected this number. They didn't think it was going to be this bad, but they knew that it would be worse than what the previous estimates were. The main reasons for it was a drop in consumer spending and largely a drop in healthcare spending, because there had been some initial estimates that with the implementation of Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act, that there was more money being spent on healthcare. That turned out not to be the case. So that was a big reason why the number dropped. Another reason was the U.S. was just exporting a lot less goods and services than it had before. So that's the reason for the decrease. You're seeing most economists are saying, hey, things are going to get better. We expect to see a big rebound in these 3 months we're in right now, the second quarter of the year. The question is, where do we go from here? You know, was that an anomaly, or are we just kind of just dragging along?
Well, how do we square that with all the other reports that I've been reading about strong consumer confidence? You mentioned consumer spending was down. When you see a number like 2.9%, that's such a drastic dip, it kind of cuts against all those other things I thought I knew about what people are willing to spend.
Yeah, and I think the expectation is that you will see a lot of economists, you'll even see the Federal Reserve most likely come out and adjust downwards how much they think the economy will grow this year. This is the big conundrum right now, that you're seeing things look better. You're seeing there's decent job growth that's happening. You're seeing businesses looking like they're starting to spend money on expansion. So those are all good signs. But at the same time, you're also seeing some inflation really starting to go up. Right now, the food index, this is, you know, where we spend our money on meat and things like that, it's posted its largest increase in about 3 years.
That's prices. Prices are going up.
Prices are going up for things like food, for shelter, for things where, you know, real people live. And if you're paying more for those sorts of things, then you have less money to spend elsewhere, and that can actually lead to the economy not growing. So this is the big conundrum here, which is, are we muddling along? Is this just going to be another lackluster year? Or what will it take for us to take off? Were these first 3 months of the year just a complete anomaly, or something deeper is happening?
Let's talk about healthcare real quick, because it's a gigantic part of the economy. 17% is in the healthcare sector. Obamacare was supposed to either lead to drastic increases in health spending if you were against Obamacare, or if you were for Obamacare, lead to increases in spending, but in a good way. More people have insurance. They can go to the doctor. They can get treated. People make money on those services. But neither of those things are happening.
I think the jury's out right now. I think the initial numbers showed that there was less spending in healthcare the first 3 months of the year. I think we're just going to have to see how it plays out in terms of what individuals spend, what corporations spend, and how the healthcare system behaves with the Affordable Care Act.
It's
now
just too new. It's too new.
Yeah,
they need a couple years for it to marinate and see how it affects the system.
Exactly.
Yeah, interesting, because healthcare is such a gigantic part of overall economic performance. That's Charlie Herman, business and economics editor for The Takeaway and WNYC. Thanks, Charlie.
Thank you.
Oh, and a clash inside the penalty area involving Chiellini.
Oh, dear. Looks to me.
Came known quickly as the cannibal.
Take a bite.
And that's the third time.
Oh, dear.
Oh.
Dare I say it, that he's had a little bite at Chiellini.
Put your flags up in the sky. Everybody's got a hungry heart.
Oh, dear, they say. Well, usually we play some of the great goal calls from the World Cup. But today, one of the great bite calls of all time, call it leaving your mark on the world's greatest sporting event. It's worth hearing this commentary from ESPN in full after the montage you just heard. Listen to this.
Oh, and a clash inside the penalty area involving Chiellini.
What's Chiellini claiming here? It looks to me, dare I say it, that he's had a little bite at Chiellini.
Surely not again. Surely not again.
Surely, yes, again, John Champion with the call on ESPN there. Yes, Uruguay star striker Luis Suarez has done it again, this time against one of the Italian defenders. Now, seconds after that bite, Uruguay scored, knocking Italy out of the World Cup. But in truth, no one is talking about the result. FIFA, which is soccer's governing body, has now officially charged Suarez with biting. And a process has now started in all likelihood that we'll see him kicked out of the tournament. Now, I want to remind you that we did warn you last month about this player, Luis Suarez. Here's Roger Bennett from the podcast Men in Blazers speaking with John just a few weeks ago. Listen.
Uruguay have a phenomenal striker, Luis Suarez, who will stop at nothing to score goals. He's got more teeth than Anne Hathaway, who he actually closely resembles. He's one, you Americans will remember, he's the guy that saved the ball again in the last World Cup with his hands to stop a...
Anne Hathaway was?
This guy, Luis Suarez, then presented the Oscars with James Franco. He wasn't very good.
Discussion about Luis Suarez's teeth there. So I want to go back with our executive producer, Rupert Allman. Before the start of the games, he gave us 5 golden rules for watching the World Cup. But Rupert, I think you left out a 6th one, which is watch out for Luis Suarez's jaws.
They're incredible. And the whole thing now is just this World Cup has had everything. Absolutely everything. And now we have cannibalism into the mix. So FIFA have got a task on their hands because they need to sort this out, and they need to sort it out pretty quick.
We heard John Champion from ESPN saying, not again, surely not again, surely not again. A track record, football fans will know. You can go on YouTube and find 3 or 4 instances of Luis Suarez.
What's
his problem?
He's been banned before. I mean, he does have a problem here. I mean, he goes back. The last one was when he bit Ivan Ivanovic from Chelsea, and he got a 10-match ban over that one. But you've got to take a listen to Suarez, because clearly he thinks that this is a bit of a mountain out of a molehill. And this is how he explained what happened in his post-match interview. It's just a translation.
I don't know what they have asked our coach about. The only thing I know is that those things happen on the pitch. I just collided with his shoulder. They are just casual incidents that happen during a soccer game.
I did not get to see the match. I did see part of the match, not that part, but I did go back and watch the replay. Not casual, not incidental. I'm sorry.
No, I think what's quite interesting is that there's still quite a lot of people talking about the idea where he apparently bit Cellini. I don't think there's any apparently about it. I mean, you look at everything that's out there, and he goes in there with his gnashers, and we know he has more teeth than Anne Hathaway. We're clear about that point.
We've established that.
And he went in there. Now, here's the timetable. So Uruguay are still very much in this tournament, and they play Colombia on Saturday. And the chances are that FIFA have to make a decision. They've now charged him with biting. They've got to ascertain about what the punishment now is. Because the chances are, if Uruguay stay in this tournament, having Suarez still on the team for the rest of the tournament is going to be a distraction. And I think so far, the organisers feel that this has been an incredible tournament. The games have been fantastic. The atmosphere has been brilliant. And this, if you like, to kind of mix a metaphor, will leave a mark on the game. And they want to make sure that this goes away fairly quick.
I tend to be a bit of a purist, Rupert, but to me, incidents like this, they're going to talk about banning Luis Suarez from the rest of the tournament. They're going to talk about banning him for a couple of matches. I'm the one who says somebody with like this who has a track record, ban him for life. I don't know what you would have to say about that, but that's my final word on Luis Suarez, Uruguayan striker, who, as my boss Rupert says, left his mark on the World Cup. Marriage, you know, it's all about that C word.
There's a lot of compromise that has to happen.
There's a tremendous amount of
choices.
How
you're raising your kid, what you're
where
doing
you're
here.
Where you're going to live, what you're buying, what you're, you know, where you're going to live.
So, and we do, I mean, and I am so not much. The kind of person who's just like, oh, really? Okay, dear, that's fine, yeah.
Being married and starting a family can come with lots of happy moments.
Sometimes when I think he's the biggest jerk in the world, and then he'll do something funny or he'll say something funny, and I'll see him the way I saw him when I met him. And I'll laugh. I'll think to myself, oh, that's why I married him.
You can hear some marital joy there. But marriage can also bring hard times.
I mean, without getting into detail,
well,
our child
was
diagnosed with a life-threatening illness 2 weeks before her 3rd birthday.
Doug Block is a documentary filmmaker, but like a lot of people in that business, he had to make ends meet, and that meant filming dozens, hundreds of weddings. But after seeing hundreds of cakes and dances and relatives and vows, Doug started to wonder, what happens to all these people later? A wedding is one thing. A marriage is, well, something else entirely. So he decided to make a documentary about that exact thing. In his latest film, 112 Weddings, Doug checks in with some of the couples whose weddings he filmed over all those years and learns about their marriages. Producer and filmmaker Doug Block joins me now to talk about his film, which premieres on HBO on June 30th. Doug, welcome.
Hi.
And also joining me, Janice and Alexander Kaye, one of the couples that Doug filmed for his movie. Welcome.
Hi, Todd.
Hi, Todd.
And Janice and Alexander, you are wedding number...
Well, 111
technically. 111. We have two ceremonies in the film.
And I wanted to ask you about that because you're sort of an interesting case of two different kinds of weddings, and we might talk about the marriage a little bit as well, but you're okay with that because that's why you're here. Well, yes. Doug, as I mentioned, you found yourself filming lots and lots of weddings over and over and over. Some reviewers of your film have had a suspicion that you had this idea all along, that as you were filming these weddings, you knew that one day you would have a great film by patching all this stuff together and interviewing people later.
I'd say by wedding one.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, weddings are phenomenal for a documentary filmmaker to experience, to be alone with a couple, an ordinary couple, on this most extraordinary day in their lives together, and to be kind of a professional voyeur.
Your film kind of presents this clash of ideals, you know, on the wedding day with reality, which is the marriage. And I wondered a little bit, as interesting as it is, gosh, is it, I don't know, it's truth-telling, but is it a little unfair? I mean, nobody on their wedding day thinks about the realities to come. They're thinking about celebrating.
Yeah, and what's really unfair is, you know, I'm coming in for one day, you know, years later, and really just getting a snapshot of their marriage based on an interview. So it's really about time, you know, in a sense, and what time does to any relationship like that, whether you're married or not, you know, the same issues are coming up over time. So it's just fascinating to see, you know, in contrast, the emotions of the wedding day and the joy and the exuberance. And, you know, we all go to weddings and wonder, like, really, are they really going to be that happy when you know, years later, what are they going to look like then?
Right. How many movies have there been where some cynical person sitting in pew number seven going, I give them 2 years. Right. Right. They'll be divorced.
Well, you know, that's why movies end on the wedding, right? Happily Ever After is complicated.
And in your film, Happily Ever After is just the first chapter, because then we get to the ever after. Now, Janice, I want to turn to you, and Alexander, maybe you'll just listen for a second. Maybe you've learned to do that. I don't know. You mentioned before you had two weddings. Your first wedding that Doug filmed was an elaborate 3-day kind of extravaganza, right?
Yeah, our first ceremony was what we wanted our ceremony to be. You know, when you get to a point in your relationship, you say, okay, what's the next step? And we decided to really discuss it. You know, do we want to have a ceremony where we invite our friends and family and proclaim our love to each other? Checkbox, yes. Do I want to wear white? Not really. No. Do we want to wear rings? Yes. Do I want to change my name? Yes. Do we want a government contract? Mm-hmm. And we sat there, we hesitated, and we're like, well, what does that truly mean? So we did a little research and, you know, the history of marriage, and we just said, you know what? This isn't right for us. And we just said no to that one. And then we still had the 3-day extravaganza, and it was wonderful.
And then later on, you had a much more pared down ceremony, sort of a restatement of your vows, as it were, which was much smaller. Alexander, it makes me wonder when I hear about all of this kind of detailed planning and soul searching that went into your wedding. Has marriage been like that, as easy to plan and as personal as the wedding one?
That's a good question. I think marriage, at least in my experience, has been truly a journey. We launched on this wonderful ceremony, and you do have this idea that it's always going to be that magnificent. But I think what ends up happening is life takes over, and the events of life take over. And it's unexpected a lot. And so when we did our partnership ceremony, the thing that struck me was I knew Janice was the woman with whom I could do that journey. And as the different pieces of life show up, unexpected, sometimes very tough, you can't plan for them. So what you do is you stay together and you face them together and you have to learn how to work it through together. That's what I think marriage has been post-ceremony.
It's been kind of a recurring theme of the film because we go back and revisit 9 couples and life happens to them all and how they face the challenges that life throws at them over time is what, you know, distinguishes whether the marriages work or don't work. In a couple of cases, they didn't work.
Janice, do you remember what you thought your future would be like on your wedding day?
Yes, and to be honest with you, it is what it is, and it's what you make of it, and it's how you approach every tiny little challenge along the way.
Mm-hmm. Alexander, let me give you the last word since you're part of this film. Look back through this film if you want to and give a little bit of advice to not your wedding number 111, your first one, wedding number 72, somebody getting married, you've been through it. What do you want to say to them?
There's a couple things. First, I think the relationship starts to die when the communication dies. And communication goes from being this in love, intimate, emotional communication to like transactional. Don't forget to talk. Don't forget to express your needs. Don't forget to keep the conversation alive, to talk about the way you're changing, to talk about your evolving. If you stop that, that's going to be one issue. And I think the other piece is don't forget that you're a couple. You know, we forget with life and how it takes over with kids and work. We forget that you're actually a couple, so don't forget to date. Don't forget to get up in the morning together. Don't forget to go for a walk. Don't forget to give a gentle kiss or just to remind each other that you're together. You will be together for a long, long time.
Hopefully.
Hopefully. And if you are, then I think those are the two. And if I have a second more, I think there's a third for me, which is, and this is really important, be mindful not to rely on the other to make you happy. Find your own happiness and bring that to the marriage and bring it generously. If you think the other is going to make you happy and that's the root of your happiness, I think you're going to run into some problems. So find your way.
Alexander and Janice Kaye have two weddings in the film 112 Weddings, and I thank them for joining us. Doug Block, the sequel, 613 bar mitzvahs, right?
Yeah, or maybe 17 brisses.
You were ready for that one. Doug Block is the filmmaker of 112 Weddings. Doug, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And the film 112 Weddings premieres on HBO June 30th. You can share your marriage advice by calling us at 8778-MY-TAKE or visit us at thetakeaway.org. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Todd Zwillick, John Hockenberry. We'll be back tomorrow. This is The Takeaway.
Support for The Takeaway comes from Reputation.com, encouraging everyone to check their online search results because search results define you or your business. Learn more at Reputation.com. Lumosity.com, personalized brain training programs developed by neuroscientists to challenge memory, attention, and problem solving through games. Learn more at Lumosity.com. The Henry Luce Foundation, for increased understanding of East and Southeast Asia. And the Rockefeller Foundation, whose transportation initiative is promoting equitable and sustainable developments in communities across the country.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.